if you would, from the state of New York's our wonderful jail and prison ministry, Brother Dale Morey. Come on up, Brother Dale.
I do want to thank the church and the pastor for having us in. We're about an hour and a half southwest of Buffalo in a little place called Belfast, New York. I didn't grow up in Belfast, New York. I did grow up in the city, but I was just talking to the brother back there that now that I got used to living in the country, when we do go in the cities, I can't wait back get back to the country. And it's so anyway, it's a good thing. Anyway, I have my wife Amy here with me. My daughter Autumn's with next to her, and that's my son Luke. We actually came out to Indiana because my son Luke he's in the Civil Air Patrol. That's the auxiliary of the Air Force. And so he had search and rescue training out here in Indiana. And so we came for his graduation. We're looking for a church to come to just to come and join the worship service and such before we headed home. And we got a hold of Brother Gerard. We met him at Black Creek. Him and Joe Kime came and presented the MAP ministry at our church. That's how we got connected with him. And so he said, hey, you know, I asked the pastor if you can come in and present the ministry. I said, wonderful. That'd be great. We'll show up on Sunday because going to church is not something I do. It's who I am. After I got saved 8 years ago, church wasn't something I did. It's something who I became. You see, there's a difference between people who just go to church and a difference between people who know that's who they are. You see, when Jesus Christ came in my life, that's who he made me to be. He made me a new man in Christ. That's what it says. He didn't make me somebody who just to come and sit and fill a pew. That's reality. He changed my life. 2 Corinthians 5:17 says, therefore, if any man be in Christ Jesus, he is a new creature. Old things are, A-R-E. That's present tense. That's talking about right now. Old things are passed away, and behold, all things are, A-R-E, present tense, become new. I'm a new creature. I'm not a new creation. I'm a new creature because I have Jesus Christ now living inside of me. It makes me a new creature. Something that never existed until the day I got saved 8 years ago. 8 years ago, I finally came to the realization in John 8:32, it says, you'll know the truth and the truth will set you free. No, that's not what it says. King James Bible says, you'll know the truth and the truth will make you free. Okay? My whole entire life, being in the jail and prison ministry, I was set free my whole entire life from mental hospitals, and I was set free from rehabs, and I was set free from jails and prisons. I was set free from boys' homes. How are we going to go out there and offer people the same thing the world offered me? You see, Jesus Christ said, you know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Well, what's the difference? Well, this glass of bottle here, I can set it anywhere I want because it's already in existence. But Jesus says he'll make you free. That means he's going to give you something that you never had in your entire life until that very moment that you took him as your Savior, and now he's going to make you free. He's going to give you something that the world could not do. You see, I grew up in a very abusive home. My mother was a drug addict, alcoholic. I learned to steal from my mother. My mother brought us out stealing shoes and everything else. So I grew up in a pretty rough time. We moved around quite a bit. My mother's boyfriends were very abusive to us. And hearing Pastor talk about the survivor, and I was a survivor. My mother's boyfriends, for instance, would make us kneel on raw rice in the corner until our knees bled, and they would burn our fingertips and so on and so forth. So we went through it. You know, my mother was very abusive herself, you know, not so much physically, but her mouth tore me apart. You know, her words hurt me more than somebody's fist could. You know, words hurt people. And they hurt them worse. Hey, listen, you can come up and punch me in the face 1,000 times. I'll get over. I'll heal. But then words hurt, man. They stick forever. I'm just telling you, the tongue. That's why the Bible talks about the tongue in the book of James, but I'm not even going to go there. But I'm just saying those things helped destroy my life. Made me a very hateful and bitter person. I was molested as a child. A man molested me. Now let me just tell you this. He took my innocency from me. He took my childhood from me. He threatened to kill my mother and my brother if I said anything. I kept my mouth closed. I didn't say nothing. It was very hurtful. And then a babysitter started molesting me, a woman. That was hurtful. Just made me a very bitter person, very angry. So we moved up from Florida up to Buffalo, and they already had 2 strikes against me at this point in my life. I was 12 years old when we finally hit the streets of Buffalo. We moved from Florida, Volusia County. Anybody knows anything about Florida out there where Stetson University is, in a little place called DeLand, Florida? And so we move up to Buffalo at the age of 12 years old, and the trouble came real quick for me when I got to the city, real quick. By the time I was at age 13, I was already in my first boys' home. I was already out there fighting. Because what happened is I came to the realization that now it was my turn to go out there and hurt people. That I could have that control over who's going to hurt what and what. And so that's what I started to go out there doing. I started going out there and I started venting my anger. I started venting my venom and my hatred upon these people. And I would physically hurt them, and it made me feel good. It made me feel good to go out there and spread that hatred to people. It made me feel good to see them physically hurt, because now I was the one who was going to hurt them, because as a child, that's what happened to me. Now it's my turn to go out there and do the same thing. 14 years old, I was put in his boys' home, and I ran away. Father Baker's boys' home. If you've ever heard anything about Buffalo, there's a boys' home out there called Father Baker. Got put in that home, and I kept running away because the threat of molestation, to the point where so much that I took a big butcher knife after a kid. I was going to kill him right there on the spot, and they were just trying to do things to me. And I was already full of hatred from what happened to me down south. I already had that hatred in me. I'm just telling you, if that staff wasn't there, that boy probably would have got stuck. And it felt good having that knife in my hand. It felt great having that type of power over somebody and seeing the fear in their face, because I remember the fear in my face when that was being done to me. It didn't make me a nice person. By the time I was the age 16, I was already doing my first prison bid. 16, going to jail. When I got arrested, the officer said this. He said, "No more, you're going to go to the little boys' homes. You're going to the big house now." I said, "Good, I'm ready for it." You know why I was ready for it? Because that's all them boys' homes did, was train me how to be a better convict. That's what they taught me. Prepared me for going to jail. Because nobody was coming in there telling us about any hope. Nobody's coming in there telling us there's this man named Jesus Christ that could change your life. I joined my first gang at 16 years old in that jail. And I liked having that family. It was the first real family that I've ever had. And so I grew into that type of lifestyle. And I got into many gangs growing up throughout jail and prisons. And then I joined a big one. And I don't say the name of the not for fear. I don't say their name because of fear. I'm not afraid of them. I'm saved. I'm born again. Were you going to threaten me with heaven? Okay? I don't do that out of respect, because they don't play nice. That's reality. The gang that I was in don't play nice. And so I joined a gang and grew up in some power very quickly. I was security when I first started in there, which means I was the one who was always around the president. They liked me. They called me the crazy white boy, the hate tank. So they knew me as the crazy white boy in prison, the hate tank, because that's just the type of life I live. That's what I went out there and did. I just did that kind of stuff. I didn't take anything, no nonsense. And so they liked me and said, "Hey, man, would you come in?" And they prospected me, and they liked what they saw and so on and so forth. And I ended up joining that, and I grew through the ranks pretty quickly. I got in the ranks pretty quickly. I got some power, man. And now I had power over hundreds of guys in this jail. I was a shot caller. And they gave me all this power. What am I going to do? A person full of hatred and bitterness with all this power. Wow. Wow. It wasn't long after I got to my last prison that I was in. A gentleman, he said, "Hey, how about coming to a Bible study?" Religion? Listen, I'm not into religion. You can have, listen, I don't want none of that nonsense, man. What is that going to do for me? That stuff ain't going to touch me. He said, "Seriously, I want you to come and hear this guy. He's from Old Time Baptist Church out there in Hanbro, New York. They have a huge tent meeting out that way every year." He said, "Pastor Lou Godano is his name. He's gone in heaven now, but I thank God for him." So he says, "Come, man. You know, he's an ex-gang member." What? Come on. That nonsense. He said, "Come here, man." Sure. I'll go hear him. So I started going to Old Time Baptist Church Thursday night Bible study. And I seen him, old Luke Donato, rolled up in there. And man, they call him the hammer. He's 320 pounds. And man, when he preached, man, he hit that pulpit. Wow. And I mean, just the thunder in that prison, man. Just thundered through the. I mean, it was a room probably about this size here, maybe just a little bit smaller. And man, he'd preach that gospel, man, to people. He'd give his testimony, telling people about what Jesus Christ had did for him. And let me just tell you something. When he picked up that King James Bible, it started unraveling what that world had done to me. Listen to me. When he preached that King James Bible, it started unraveling what the world had done to me. It started getting that conscience that had gotten seared and started unraveling that conscience, and things started bothering me. The more I went and heard him preach that Bible, the more I said, oh my goodness, what is going on with me? I don't like the way I feel. Hey, what is this that I'm feeling in here? What is this that I'm feeling? Man, that's he made that conscience come alive again by preaching that Bible. I said, oh my goodness. Probably my fifth or sixth time in there, I said, I can't do this anymore. I cannot do this anymore. I have to make a choice. Here's the choice I have to make. The choice is this. I'm either going to stay running with my homeboys, or I'm going to sell out to this. Unsaved. I want you to know that. Unsaved. Unsaved. I said, Lord, whoever you are, this God that I'm looking for, if this is real, I'm going to approach this gang and I'm going to tell them that I can't do it no more. I can't sit there anymore and listen to this Bible being preached and sit there knowing what I'm doing with that gang. And I approached them. We had a monthly meeting. Every month we went out for our monthly meetings. We did roll calls and such there. And so I went out to the monthly meeting and I said, hey, guys, I got something to tell you. I said, I've been going to this Bible study. And something's happening, man. I'm having a hard time right now. I said, I can't do this anymore. I need to get out. Hey. They just kind of looked at me like a deer in the headlights. Because you don't just walk away from that stuff. You don't just walk away from the gang life. They don't let you just walk away. And they said, well, you know how to get out. I said, I know how to get out. I'm full aware of how this whole thing is going to work. And I said, but I'm willing to do that. And I said, okay, you come back next month. We'll talk about it. You come back next month at the next meeting, and we'll make our decision. I said, very good. And so I did. The month rolls around, longest month of my life. I'm nervous. I'm looking for people at all directions. They're ready to hit me. I don't know what's going to go on because they're thinking now there's something wrong with me. I go back out the next month. I stick a little pocket King James Bible in my pocket. I have no clue. Just as lost, but I put that little King James pocket Bible in my pocket, and I went out there marching. I said, okay. And they said, all right, Mr. Moore. They called me Mr. Moore. All right, Dale, how do you get out of this thing? And I go through the whole process of telling him how to get out, and he looks at me, and he's got like a cold face. I mean, he's just staring at me like he wanted to drop a bomb on me right there at that moment. And he said, there is another way. I said, what is that way? He said, religion. Well, hey, I'll take it. I'll take it. Hey, I'll take that. Whatever you want, whatever it's going to take, you go ahead and give me that. He said, here, this is what's going to happen. You're going to be watched. They're going to put somebody on me, and then people are going to watch every move I make. They're going to look and see if I'm infiltrating. They're going to look and see if I'm really being real. And they said, if we think one wrong thing, we're coming after you. We'll get you. I said, I understand that fully. How do you know I understood that? Because back in my room, I had my bunk and stuff all packed up in a roll, ready to go, because I thought they were going to cut me right at that moment. I thought they were going to stab me. That's the way to get out of it. They were going to put me in the hospital and severely cut me or stab me and try to kill me. All my stuff in my bunk is all rolled up, ready for them to go. It's all packed up. I said, I'll take that. 2 years goes by. Faithful. Got 6 months till I go home. 6 months out of 5 years, I got 6 months left. We have a meeting out in the yard. He says, we've made our decision. Our decision is this. We're going to let you go. You're not our brother anymore, but you'll always be our brother in our heart. And that was it. I was done. They said, you don't have to pay any more taxes, no more monthly meetings. It's all over with. You've been stripped of all your power. Go ahead and do what you got to do. And that was it. They never bothered me again, ever. And I've met some brothers since I've been out. I was an unsaved person when that happened. I just want you to know that. I did not get saved in prison. I got out of prison with a profession. I made a profession. As a matter of fact, they used to call me Peter and Paul, me and my friend. We'd go around preaching to Muslims and everything else. And I had what they famously call jailhouse religion. That's what I got. I got a good dose of jailhouse religion, and it looked real good. You see, somebody who comes from the street, I was a good chameleon. I can make it look real good. I can get in to fit in. And that's what I did with religion. Now it's just another aspect of my life where I can take and get some power. I can make myself look good and go out there and grab this whole Bible thing and make it look real wonderful. When I got out, it went downhill very quickly. The problem with me and making that profession was I always knew that something didn't happen inside. I was still the same old scumbag that I've always been. Nothing in me changed. Not one bit of me changed. That Bible says that if I become a man in Jesus Christ, that things are going to change. It did. Jesus Christ says, you'll know them by the fruit they bear. I didn't have any fruit to bear. I got out and I met her. Unfortunately, I dragged her into the mess with me. We tried finding a church. I went out and I did some street preaching, smoking, looking at pornography and everything else, drinking. Nothing ever changed in my life. Now I'm going to drag her into it. And it went downhill very quickly. I got her into drinking. She's smoking weed again. I mean, just we're out there stealing. I mean, the churches are out there. When we met our pastor for the first time, he says, you know, other churches warn me about you guys because we're out there trying to scam churches for money and everything else. Our pastor walked up to my porch one day, who's now my pastor now. His daughter was going to a college to finish up some homeschooling stuff she had to finish up. So he'd go sit in the parking lot of that college every day and wait for his daughter to go through her classes. She ended up talking to the secretary there, the receptionist, and she said, my dad just got a new church out in Black Creek, New York. And her mom ended up being my wife's mother, who's the receptionist there. And her mom's like, what? Your dad is where? He's a new pastor in Black Creek. Please tell him to go visit my son-in-law and my daughter. They're in trouble. Would you tell him to please go and visit? Because they are in some deep trouble. Sure enough, some man shows up. I'm sitting there with a wife beater on. I'm on my porch smoking a cigarette, drinking a beer. She's in the house doing whatever. And this guy comes walking up. I see a lady sitting in the car. I'd asked him later on, I said, why didn't you bring your wife down? And he said, not with you sitting there, I wasn't bringing her. We left her right in the car. He said, I didn't know what you were going to do. He came up and he said, John Asquith. He said, I'm the new pastor at Black Creek Baptist Church. I'd like to be your pastor. And I told him in not so many nice ways to keep it moving. I don't need his religion. I don't need his Jesus, and I don't need his religion, and I don't need anything that he has to offer. Within 10 minutes, I told him, and just so you know, I'm already saved. That's what I told him. I'm already saved. I don't need your Jesus. I don't need your... Go ahead, I'm already saved. He said, okay, I'm not going to argue with you about that. And he started talking to my wife. She ends up going to church, Black Creek Baptist Church, very faithful. And I would just rail on her, pick on her, call her a holy roller, a Bible thumb, and she stayed strong, man. She stayed sturdy. And I'd watch that, and it'd tear me out the frame watching her do that. And she said one morning, it was a Sunday morning, she said, and I'm hungover, she said, would you just come to church? This guy preaches a King James Bible like he'd never heard it, because she knew I had a fascination from prison about a King James Bible. Because that thing, that something did that. Something happened to me with that Bible, okay? And she said, he preaches the King James Bible like you've never heard it. I'm going to go. You know why I'm going to go to that church? I'm going to go and correct this guy. He thinks he knows the Bible. I'm going to go show him a thing or two about a King James Bible. So I told him. Whew. Oh, Lord have mercy. I sat there and he started preaching and holy. I mean, just tell you something. It started happening to me again like it happened in prison. I mean, he's just tearing my heart out preaching that Bible. Tearing it out, and I just couldn't take it. And I started being pretty faithful. And I said, why can't I? God, you said there was going to be help in this thing. Why aren't you helping me? Why aren't you saving me? It's the problem here. And my pastor said, be diligent in that Bible. Be diligent in prayer. Jesus Christ wants to save you. Oh, I'm going to be diligent. I'm really going to get into the Bible. So what I did is I took that jailhouse religion and I transferred it on the outside. And I made another profession. I had come back from a Reformers Unanimous meeting. I know you guys got RU here. Pastor Roger Hain had Reformers Unanimous about 45 minutes away from us. And my pastor said, I want you guys to go to that program. So we went there and we sat in that. I don't know, it was probably two or three times me and my wife went. And we just looked around the church people. We realized, oh my goodness, we don't have what they have. We're lost. We ain't saved. If we were to die right now, Amy, I said, man, we're going to die and go to hell. That's what's going to happen. I mean, for the first time it hit me, I don't have that salvation that the Bible talks about. My wife goes, oh my goodness, we've missed that. I said, yeah, we missed it. We went back to our pastor. I mean, we were just in tears. We were crying. I said, Pastor, I'm lost, man. I don't want to die right now, so I'll go to hell. You know, that stuff never bothered me before. I would have told you I'm going to go to hell and party with you. Here I am crying about going there. Here I'm crying about what is going on in my life. For the first time, I'm starting to see who I was through God's eyes. You see, the Bible talks about, Paul talks about worldly sorrow and godly sorrow. There's a difference in that, my friends. That worldly sorrow is what I always tried to hold on to for my conviction, what I tried to hold on to for salvation. Well, this was done to me. This was done to me. And that's why I did that. And that's why I did that. That's why I need to be saved. That's why I need to be saved. Yeah. There's a godly sorrow. What is that godly sorrow? For being a rebel against the holy God. That's the godly sorrow that he's talking about that worketh repentance unto salvation that I could never get to because I was so clung onto this worldly sorrow. Left me lost, dying, and going to hell, trying to hold on to that worldly sorrow, trying to hold on to those things that were done to me. Jesus Christ had to bust that wide open. And I remember the night that I got saved that he showed me. You're a rebel against the holy God. That's the problem. And I got saved on my living room floor in front of my couch. Nobody was there to lead me into prayer. Nobody had to show me the Romans Road. I knew because God had just showed me what I was in his eyes. And I got saved 8 years ago. 6 months later, my wife got saved in April. 4 years after that, God called me into the ministry that I did not want. I was not looking for a jailhouse ministry. I was not looking for a jail and prison ministry. I spent all my life in three different states in jails and prisons. I did jail time in Florida. I did jail time in Vermont. I did jail time up here in New York in prison and such. I didn't want a jail or prison ministry. I didn't want to have to go back to those places. Somebody asked me to come give your testimony in the jail. I said, okay, I'll go give my testimony. After I fought, kicked, and screamed, I went and took the four-hour course that you got to go to get in. And so I went in there one time. I went in there two times. I went in there three times. I went in there a fourth time, and I realized, oh, my goodness. And I'm crying in my car. I said, Lord, I'll go. I'll go. I see it now. I couldn't see it then. So I've been in the prison ministry, jail and prison ministry, 4 years. And in those 4 years, the Lord has opened many doors and closed many. I was in one jail for 2.5 years. I got kicked out of there for doing the right thing. But that's just the devil. But in that time, I learned a lot of things. I learned a lot of things that I should do. I'm a convict, man. I came 40 years out there from on the street. I'm an ex-gang member. I didn't know how to do everything perfectly. You guys need to pray for me because I'm still trying to learn how to talk to kings. I'm still trying to learn how to talk to people that need to be talked to the proper way because I can go in there and talk the street lingo. But when I got my doctorate. I graduated last year. I got my doctorate. So Dr. Dale Morris, here's a street guy who's got his doctorate now and is going in there and talking to people like he's on the street still. You see, God has had to teach me how to talk to kings. And in those 4 years, that door got closed for doing the right thing, and then another door opened where I have free access, free reign to 1,600 inmates. 1,600 inmates, the Lord says, go. I went and sat down with the sheriff, the undersheriff, and the superintendent. And they said, Mr. Morey, we want to put you somewhere that most people don't want to go. I said, I'm ready. I said, what's it called? He said, the mainframe. Okay, what's the mainframe, sir? He said, the mainframe is for the most violent inmates. Nobody wants to go there. I said, send me. I'll be there. I was them. I lived them. And the Lord has built us a ministry right there in that mainframe. The Lord has given me many, many men. The Lord has given me many things to do. I got a Bible study and I were able to pull these men out where they would never do that before. I get to pull these men out and sit down and I get to have Bible studies with these men in a separate room off of that floor. I get to go in there and have what they call professional visits where I sit down and I counsel these men one-on-one in a visit room, just me and them and being able to counsel them. I'm now able to work with the families when they get out and help them transition out of that life into this Christian life because you know, I'm going to say this. Now, they need help to transition from that jail and prison life into a Christian life. They don't know how to do it out here. And so the Lord, pray with me on Isaiah chapter 4, 6. It's called the place of refuge. And they're going to be transition homes, not clean, sober homes and all that. Transition homes to help these men and women be able to transition from that lifestyle into a Christian lifestyle. And I thank God that God gave me my wife who helped me to transition through that. She had no clue what she was doing, but God did. My wife had to teach me how to write checks and everything. I had no clue how to do any of that. So the Lord has given me visions on Isaiah 4, 6, a place of refuge to have those transition homes. We do in-home Bible studies with the men and women and their families in their homes. On Monday nights, we go and visit and we do in-home Bible studies at their home. And we help them. We're embedded with social services. We're embedded with foster care and so on and so forth to help these men and women get their families back together and be able to live as Christians. And see, it's not only the help in there they need, but the Lord showed me they need help when they get out. And that's also a part of my ministry is to go in there and build a foundation with them. Stay established with them through their whole entire jail and prison bid. And then when they get out, we're there. Boom, boom. You ready? We're going to continue this life out here and teach them that. That's what the Lord has. That's what Liberty Behind Bars and Beyond is. That's what we are. That's the ministry the Lord has given me. Go in there and work with these men and women and then establish a relationship and then work with them and their families when they get out. I have families who come and visit us. We get to talk with them and we get to counsel them, marriage counselings and all that kind of stuff because they don't have that stuff out there. Listen, probation and parole, they're too busy to help these people. Their caseloads are unbelievable, especially this day. They need somebody to help stand in that gap for them, and that's what Liberty Behind Bars is. That's what we are. That's what the Lord has made us into. And so pray because we have a pen pal program where I can hook you up with a male. If you're a male, you'd have a male inmate who you would write. No personal information is shared. All mail comes to me. I check it over, I send it to them, but vice versa. All their mail comes to me. They don't know your first name, that you don't know their first name, you don't know what state they're in, they don't know what state you're in. Okay? That's not what it's for. It's not to get hooked up with or anything else to encourage Christian brothers and sisters. That's what it's for. Those who are left behind the walls who can't always have somebody come in and talk to them. But you know what? We can send an encouragement card. We can send them a letter encouraging them with Bible verses and so on and so forth. That's what the Pen Pal program is designed to do. Number two, we have also what they call the devotional. Every 3 weeks, I have pastor friends of mine, myself, we write a devotional and we send them in. We send them in every 3 weeks. They get devotionals. So far, we're in Arkansas, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New York, Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina. We work with those who are in state prisons, federal prisons. It doesn't matter where they're at. We are in all jails. Because that's the door the Lord has opened for Liberty Behind Bars. It's nothing I've done. I'm a convict saved. You see, God had to do this. And then we do, and I'm going to close with this, we also do sending in Bibles. Some of the jails allow me to bring in Bibles, but then they put them on a shelf, so I send them directly to the inmates. That way it goes right to their hand. Okay? Am I missing anything? I always have to ask my memory. She's my memory. But pray for Liberty Behind Bars as we venture into the future. We have the table set up over there. It explains a whole lot more. Both our testimonies are over there and what the ministry is about. I thank you guys for your time and your prayers.